Okay. We're not going to be having questions and answers in this session, but we're going to learn a lot of wisdom and have fun. So I want to introduce Myrna Morofsky, is an entrepreneur, consultant, mother, and grandmother. She has served on local boards and as a volunteer for various community organizations. As a consultant, she was a partner in Pro Group, a diversity training company.
Can't say that word anymore.
That's true. Oops. Forget that I said that. Let's see. Facilitated chapters of Women President's Organization and founded the Business Woman's Circle. Having previously written two business books, it was her husband's dementia diagnosis that resulted in her writing a memoir called To the Last Dance, A Partner's Story of Living and Loving Through Dementia. She frequently speaks to audiences, encouraging them to redefine caregiving to care living. Myrna was honored to be our keynote speaker at our conference in 2023. And this session is going to be recorded as long as all the other sessions. So whatever you didn't get to see, you'll be able to go on to the Jewish Family and Children's Service website and find all the different lectures that have been given. So I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you. Hi there. It's after lunch, so we need a little action, right? And I need to be able to talk. So here's what I need to do. I need to know who's in this audience. So if you would be so kind, if you are caring for someone, for a loved one, please stand up.
Okay.
Exercise. If you are someone who provides care, some service to people who are caring for others, please stand up. Okay, why aren't you standing? Come on. So everybody should be standing up somehow. You probably are a friend or something. Okay, keep standing. Okay, now I want you to think about an emotion that you have experienced or are experiencing in the role that you just described, an emotion. And you cannot use happy, sad, mad, or glad. Okay, so stretch yourself a little bit. And then in just a minute, I'm going to say go. And I want you to yell that emotion as loud as you can. Okay?
State the question again.
Okay. Some emotion that you feel frequently during your role as a care partner or a professional, or that you're feeling right now. You could be calm. You could be curious. You could be afraid. You could be overwhelmed. What is that emotion? Okay? Are you ready? One, two, three, go! Okay, now you can sit down and take a breath. Okay, so maybe you feel a little lighter, I don't know. But this time we're spending together is called Truths on the Other Side of Dementia. And you just spoke some of your truths because they're real. And we need to speak these truths. However, we rarely say them out loud. And I'm going to do that for you today. So you don't have to worry. That's the extreme of what we're going to do right now. So here's another question. Any of you feel tired? Okay. Well, I'm not talking about just needing a nap because it's after lunch. I'm talking about that soul tired. I'm talking about when you're so tired that your body aches, your patience is limited, and even making a smile hurts. And what I call that is, and I know you can't see this, but it doesn't really matter, I'll tell you. I call this care partner fatigue. This is more than just being tired. It's that deep physical, emotional, and mental exhaustion that comes from giving and giving and giving without a break and without anything back in return. And while we're always caring about them, we are silent pretending everything is okay. I did that. As a result of our truth, then when we don't talk about our truths, they go unacknowledged. And then we feel alone, and then we feel like nobody understands. So this session is about acknowledging what we are feeling and what you are feeling in your dementia story. I learned while taking care of my husband for 5 years that there was relief in telling the truth. Keeping silent just took too much energy. It was kind of like when you let an air out of a balloon. It was feeling like that. And Dr. Dan Siegel, who is a brain scientist, he coined the phrase, name it to tame it. And it means that when we put words to our feelings, when we say, I'm angry or I'm afraid, our nervous system calms down and our brain settles. And just by naming it, we ease our body tensions. Our chest lightens, our shoulders lighten up, and all those thoughts that we have go by. So I invite you today, in this time together, to reflect. Take this chance to think about you for a change. So the goal for me today is to share with you 5 fatigues that I've come up with that are experienced by care partners, and encourage you to be kinder to yourself. And then I hope for those who are professionals in the room to increase your awareness so you know how to recognize care fatigue on the people that you serve. And then finally, I'll share the C's of care living to ease that emotional burden. But before I even begin, I like to always put out some disclaimers. The first one is that this is not research-based. At the last session, when I spoke with you as the keynoter, I had the honor of sharing my story and telling my truth. And then since I've written that book, I've had the privilege of speaking to many groups. No matter who's in the room, people come up to me and say, wow, you said things that I haven't said out loud. I see heads nodding. Sometimes I see a tear. But these things I share with you today come from lived experiences, mine and the many that I have heard as I've been around speaking. And they will be recognizable to many of you. The second disclaimer I put out is I have no answers. There's no answers around dementia. But what I hope to is to nudge you a little bit and encourage you to say, what truths have you been carrying around quietly? What price are you paying for that silence? I'm sharing my story because it has no solutions. But sometimes hearing somebody's story gives you the courage to face your own. And the third disclaimer is that this is not a pity party. This is not about feeling sorry for ourselves, but it's about being real. For me, when I finally started telling my truths to doctors, social workers, and even my kids, who sometimes were surprised, I let them know how hard it was, and I let them know that I was doing the best I could. It isn't about pity. We don't want pity. We just want to be seen as whole people. So here we go. It was just about a year ago that I was asked to speak at the annual conference of Ecumen. They had a staff conference of all their staff from 70 of their Minnesota facilities. My topic was the same as today, truths on the other side of dementia. The goal that day was to help their team members become aware and more attentive to the people who come to visit their loved ones. I provided them a little background about my 51 years of marriage to Larry, and I spoke about how he received a diagnosis of early stage Alzheimer's at age 70, and that changed our dreams. You heard about dreams in the keynote. Changed our dreams of growing old together. I emphasized to them that when Larry got a diagnosis, I got one too. I became his care partner, a role I didn't want, I would have never chosen, and I was totally unprepared for. And that's when I brought out this large suitcase. Okay? And I asked the audience to imagine someone arriving to visit a resident in their facility, and while they couldn't see it, that visitor was dragging a heavy suitcase like this one. And in that suitcase was packed with truths that had never been said out loud. So I unpacked the suitcase for them, just like I'm going to do for you now. And I'm pretty sure that some of you are sitting there with a suitcase by your side right now. So we may not see it, but inside that suitcase are parts and pieces of guilt and grief, like you heard of this morning. And over time, that suitcase gets heavier and heavier, and it's harder to carry. And as I learned caring for my husband, caregiving is emotional labor. It's emotional, and it's laborious. It's hard work, and it's exhausting. So the weight builds inside that suitcase into what I've identified as five fatigues. And as I share them with you, think about how they might show up in your life. These are my stories, but what about how they might resonate for you? And this is not a pity party. This is just to heighten some awareness. So here are, as some people usually say, the Murmanovsky five fatigues. So the first one is fatigue from loss. We know dementia is a thief. It robs us of people, of pieces and parts of the person we once knew. And it continually steals from what we thought was a normal life. For me, there was no normal for Larry's diagnosis. I noticed it daily. I couldn't count on a thing. Normal, I write in my book, normal is the thing that nobody notices until it's missing. How about that one? Right? That's a truth. With Larry, it started with ketchup. Every time I'd send him to the store, no matter what I sent him for, guess what he brought back? A bottle of ketchup. Okay? That's when I knew I was in trouble. Then I remember one time we were at the airport. We were going on a trip, and we were at TSA, and he could not find his driver's license. And the flight's going to take off in a minute, and I'm standing there, and I said, check your pockets, check your pockets, check your pockets. And I was just about to check his pants pocket when I realized I'd be arrested. So I stopped, and he reached into his pocket and pulled out his driver's license. And I remember that story so much because I really suffered that day. I realized that to overcome his losses, I needed two brains, his and mine. And to avoid thinking about situations that could go wrong, I had to start thinking about how to make them go right. So that resulted in Larry's mental and physical losses for me as well as him. It was exhausting. It was in that suitcase. But let's go a little deeper. It goes beyond just those ordinary routines that you lose. Here's the things people don't talk about, at least I haven't heard. I lost my soulmate. While Larry continued to give me great hugs, time just wasn't the same between us. Oh yeah, we held hands and we walked, but the conversations were mostly me talking because he didn't talk for the last 2 years of his life. And my daughters told me they had already lost the father they knew, and they didn't want to lose me to the disease. I never told the hospice social worker my truth about why I didn't want that lift chair brought in my house. She thought I was crazy, kept asking me. And finally, I just took it, and it was like a godsend finally by the time I took it. But I made it clear to her that the reason I told my truth, the reason I didn't talk to you about it was because he would be sitting over there and I would be sitting over here. And we couldn't be together, so I couldn't put my head on his shoulder or hold his hand. That was a big aha moment for that woman. Here's another one nobody thinks about. Legal documents, major purchases. You know the list. They were conversations that Larry and I had together. And then Larry was an attorney, and so even today I keep saying, oh, that would have been a Larry question. So when I spoke to the Minnesota chapter of the elder law attorneys, I told them that what seemed like a simple request that you made of me to sign here became a huge heartbreak. Now I was taking over responsibilities that used to be ours. I had big responsibilities that they had never thought about how that could change my life. So they became even more enlightened as I described the process of getting there on time to sign the documents. And that Larry got himself locked in the bathroom in the hall, and I couldn't get him out. And so we barely made the appointment. Those lawyers still, sometimes I interact with them, and they still say, thank you, that was an aha. And some of them actually changed some of their practices so that they go out to the house instead of have people come in. So as these losses increase, so does our fatigue. And my dearest friend, she was my business partner and she's my dearest friend now, just had a heart-wrenching decision where she used to make decisions with Lee, her husband, all the time. And they built this beautiful dream house. And now he has dementia, he's Alzheimer's, and she had to make the decision to leave that beautiful dream house. And she did a decision about him without him. And the guilt that she's carrying is very difficult, especially for a woman who I have known for years who was very good at making decisions, but this one was really hard for her. All of this adds weight to our suitcase, and loss contributes fatigue. And for those of you who support and care for people who are in this position, who are caring for others, who are on the opposite side of dementia, please know that this suitcase arrives right with them when they have your care or in your service. So what else is in the suitcase? Well, there's loneliness. We all know there's a loneliness epidemic in this country. We hear about it. There are books about it. Everybody talks about it. But, you know, loneliness and Alzheimer's and being a care partner is isolation. So even the National Library of Medicine reports that those of you who have partners in facilities and live alone experience higher levels of stress than those who keep their care partner at home. And I'll let you figure out why, but that is a truth that I found. I don't know if it's you accept it or not. But let's go beyond loneliness. We know loneliness is a great source of depression, and there are podcasts and books about it. But my focus on Larry removed me from worlds that I was previously very involved in. And I was really missing the connections. I felt like my friends had disappeared. And I began to ask questions like, had they left me or had I left them? And you know what the truth was? It was both. Okay? Did they leave me because they couldn't handle hearing my life? Some did. I also stopped reaching out, even to old friends who knew me well. I was longing for companionship and intellectual conversation, as well as a change of scenery. That's when I created my film club, which I could talk about for hours, and I love them, and they're still with me today, but that saved me. But still there were those evenings when Larry was gone. He was sitting right there, but he was gone. He was quiet. He was sleeping. And I'd say, where did you go? Where did you go? The National Institute of Science unequivocally links loneliness to fatigue. Fatigue number two. Let's move to fatigue number three, fear. I could say a lot about the fatigue brought on by those unknowns on the other side of dementia. The fatigue from fear is triggered by a constant series of heavy, heavy, and often disturbing questions about what is, and more importantly, what will be. So here are a few questions that kept me up at night and are in my suitcase. How much time will we have together? Will I have to quit my job, the job I love? What if I run out of money? what if I get sick? Who will take care of him? But what's the other question? Who will take care of me? Can I trust the women that I've hired? Can I really keep Larry at home? Because, you know, those of you who heard me speak, that was my goal, to keep Larry at home. And then there was the fear that resulted when a health aide I hired said to me, "You don't have to worry anymore. He's mine now." Well, I can see from your face, you know that that didn't set well with me, and I set her straight. I was feeling like I was no longer in charge of my destiny. The biggest fear I came to realize, and this is a truth I will share that I don't share often, was realizing that I'm going to be alone someday, and Larry would be gone. So fear can be debilitating at times, and it was more than fatigue. And then we move to the fatigue of guilt, the fatigue from guilt. We can probably all agree that guilt is a fatigue that's constant. It's oppressive, and it's heavy. Here are a couple of the guilts that shows up. And you heard a few this morning, so I don't want to be too much repetitive. But I could probably list hundreds of guilts, and you could too. So first you feel guilty for not doing enough, right? Oh, if I could have just done one more thing. And please know you are doing the best job you know how to do. And I want to acknowledge that openly and honestly. You are doing everything humanly possible. I did too. And I still said I could have done more. My kids, they said they're going to write on my tombstone, "She tried." Because that's what I did, man. You can read it in the book. I really tried. The next guilt is the guilt for needing rest myself and trying to find joy or a space. And the best thing I did, and I felt a little guilty about it, but I created my own private room with the door in my house that I could escape to. And even though I used it, I felt guilty for taking care of me. And it felt like a betrayal to Larry and his needs. It was guilt. So how do you rest? How do you really rest when you're feeling this? Then you feel guilty. Here's a good one. For handing over care to someone else. So if you're a care provider, know that that's in that suitcase sitting by their side, is that they feel like you may be doing a job they should be doing. When it was the only choice left for me after an intervention from my family, I found people to provide loving care. It was never as good as mine. The last one I'll share with you is you feel guilty for witnessing your family grief and not being able to fix it because you're the mom and you're supposed to fix things and you can't make it better for them. And so that was a painful one. And one that it took my therapist to tell me that I was working so hard to try and fix everybody else's problems that I was getting crazy. Well, that was no surprise. Okay, and the final grief I want to talk about is sadness. We feel it. We know it. It's an emotion we know. And I say in my book that I probably walked around looking like Eeyore with lipstick on because I was just overwhelmed. So recently I was reunited with some friends that I hadn't seen since COVID. And they kept telling me, "You look great. You look younger." And I told my sister, "Why do you think that?" She said, "You look like hell before." You know? So I guess I did. And sadness gets to you. So these are the five fatigues I carried around all the time in my invisible suitcase. You have your own. They're my truths. What are yours? All I remember was that after Larry passed away, I had this extreme exhaustion from caring. I lived through it lovingly. I have no regrets. And I'm really glad that I did it. So if you provide service to those living on the other side of dementia, know that when they reach your office or come to your program or reach out for your services, they set down their invisible suitcase, and it's there all the time, even before they even walk in the door. Okay? So now, I said I wasn't going to have a pity party here, and so let's move on to some ways to lighten the load, to remove some of the weight, to focus on a theory that I came up with after all these talks, and I kind of, it wasn't even in my book. I just recently revised the book and added it. But I call it care living, because if we're giving and giving, but how about care and living? How about combining that and empowering choices that reframe caregiving from a burdensome responsibility to an intentional choice to keep the bad news from becoming a bad life? So for me, it's a mindset of living lovingly and focusing on what is possible. And the caregiving mindset was how I got through this. Because all I was hearing, if you've heard me talk ever, you know that I talk about, all I heard was tragedy talk. How things could go bad. How things were awful. What was next that would be bad. I never really heard anything that was hopeful or gave me possibilities. So I made a choice. I made a choice to care for Larry and to take care of myself. And to help others help me do both. You can learn more about care living at the table that I have out in the back or in the exhibit hall, and you can find it on my website or in my book, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on what care living is today. But know that there are some practices that I'll share with you that I think might lighten the load. So let's start with the C's. Okay, the C's of care living. How do you like that? I was an old instructional designer and a trainer, so it got me back into my place here. So the first one is collaborative care. So to members in the room, you know that you're doing the best you can. And no matter how you show up, you make a difference in your loved one's life. You have the history. You have the love. You have the wisdom. And there's nobody that knows them better than you. Let's remember that. Nobody knows them better than you. I never saw myself as a caregiver, and I was totally ill-equipped. I was ill-equipped for the tasks that were in front of me, and I always thought I was superwoman. So in my book, I write about how a group of women got me to share my truths. And all the truths I was hiding poured out at a retreat that I had for women business owners. Thank you, Carrie. Carrie was one of the people in my group, not this particular group. But anyway, so we were at a retreat. They saw there was something wrong, and they said, hey, what's going on? That's all it took. That was the end. Tearfully, I let them in on what I thought I could keep a secret. I still can tell you the relief from having those loving souls listen to me and console me and embrace me. And then they provided me with the ultimate care I needed that day. They insisted that I get some help for me. And that resulted in me working with a therapist for 4 years until Larry died. And I wrote about her extensively in the book. But as Larry's situation became more complicated, I had to be honest with my limitations. So I found a team to help and made sure that they understood that when Larry needed care, I was part of the deal. I needed to trust that they were clear on what mattered most to me and to us, and to recognize the emotional pain from the loss I was feeling. And I never wanted to worry that Larry was getting good care. I never wanted that worry, because then I would have never rested. So I heard a statement that resonated with this. It goes like this. If you don't set your agenda, somebody else will do it for you. Okay? So for me, that meant I had to really set clear expectations. Otherwise, I'd always be upset. It was kind of like when I was a businesswoman and I had somebody do a flyer for me, and I said, just do it the way you want. And it came back purple. I said, why'd you choose purple? Yeah, like, I have to be clear, okay? So then I won't be upset. And I needed that collaboration in the care for me to get relief. But the truth was, I was always in charge. They were working for me, okay? So that's the first C. Second one is compassionate concern. People want to help us, and their generosity is real. They drop off meals. Some run errands. They send lasagna and scented candles, of which I don't like lasagna, and I'm allergic to scented candles. But what I needed most was not left on my doorstep or in a bag. What I needed was someone who would see me as giving and giving for 24/7 and getting very little emotional support in return. When I chose to keep Larry at home, I usually got sympathy. Oh. And no empathy. And my friend, who has recently moved her spouse to a facility, what she gets is, how lucky you are to get on that list and get selected. What a relief that must be for you. They were totally missing the heartache. But what we need is someone who says, when they hear I'm fine, to really understand, you know, you might not be fine. I can't emphasize enough how important it is for care partners to receive large, large doses of empathy. But here's another truth. People can't give empathy and affirming empathy, and they can't provide meaningful compassion until we're willing to be honest. But I learned that truth didn't hurt as much as pretending. There's another line. Truth doesn't hurt as much as pretending. And that's why small acts like getting a text from a friend saying, I'm thinking about you today, or receiving a kind word or a warm gesture from Larry's hospice nurse felt so good. We can't know how other people feel, and we can't take away their heartache, but we can take a pause and give them a moment of connection, open our hearts, and demonstrate to the best we can that we understand. And I know this seems so obvious, and you've heard about empathy over and over again, but I came up with thinking about two roadblocks. The first one is that service providers are busy, and they're overwhelmed, and they're doing their job because that's what we want them to do, right? That's what we expect. So often they unintentionally forget that we are there, and we become invisible. So that's one roadblock that we just deal with. And the second one, I was going to tell you the story about that illustrates this. I don't want to skip it. I remember when I had a personal injury from transporting Larry, and I went to a physical therapist, and I explained that I was injured transporting him. And he said, oh. And then he gave me pages of exercises and do it twice a day with 20 reps and whatever, you know. Like, oh, my God, not one. Don't give me another thing for my list. What I really wish that he would have done was say, I know your days are full, but it really would help you if you could find some space to do these exercises. You know, I might have done them then, but I never did. The second roadblock is that as care partners, we are apologetic. We don't share our experiences. And I always wanted to look like I had it all together, and, you know, I never wanted to be a burden. And I remember finally when I said to my friend, I just want you to listen today. I don't need any advice. So we need compassionate concern with empathy to relieve our fatigue. And the third one I want to share with you is communication with connection. I was still Larry's wife, and I needed to be part of the dementia conversation. I needed communication that said, I see you too. When professionals stepped in to help, I didn't want to be sidelined. I wanted to be recognized as someone who still had a role to play. Even when I no longer was the primary caregiver, I was still Larry's wife for his love and for his care. One of my favorite aides, she didn't just care for Larry. She cared for me, too. She asked how I was doing, taught me things I never really wanted to know, and kept me by Larry's side. She made space for my questions, my grief, and understood and loved him, and understood that I loved him, and she would give us these little moments of privacy to go fold the laundry or whatever. I am a facilitator, but I have just recently left a job I had for 20 years. And in those years, I recognized the importance of questions as a way to connect with others. I had a life beyond dementia. You do too. And I value thoughtful questions allowing me to talk about that life, as long as it wasn't feeling nosy or it wasn't like the cashiers who say, "How's your day going?" and then they could care less. I needed sincere interest. A quick question about my grandkids, a sincere compliment, or a reminder of birthdays made a whole big difference, and it made a connection. Sometimes communication required work on my side. One of Larry's doctors became impatient with all my questions, saying to me, "Oh, Larry's so lucky to have you as an advocate," which meant I was a pain. So keep those questions going. The final one I want to talk about is called caregiving with a chuckle. Okay, let's be honest. Sometimes you just need to laugh. Okay. I used to say, "Oh, shit," a lot. And then I crack up. So today I walked in here. I hadn't planned on talking about this. But I walked in here and I saw this little chair. See this little chair? Okay, see it? Anybody? Okay, and it just reminded me of this crazy story that I just have to tell you. So Larry had a genetic disease called Gaucher's. I don't know if anybody ever knows about it, blah, blah, blah. And I was looking for a miracle. And it came up that Gaucher's had some connection with dementia. So we found the best and only doctor at the university who studied Gaucher's in adults. And we made the appointment. It took forever. We got in there. And sitting in the lobby, things looked a little strange. And we realized that he only took adults on Monday. Okay, so we walk into his exam room, and we are seated in these chairs. Two of us in these chairs. The doctor and his research assistant was sitting on big chairs, and we're telling our story. Okay. A sad story we're telling. And he says, "Oh, well, there are some treatments in the UK," and proceeds to turn to his computer, and we're just sitting here, turns to his computer and shows us the brains of a million people we had no knowledge of or no understanding of, okay? It was nothing related to who we are, because they never asked a question who we were or what. And is that care? That's pretty funny, I think. It's funny now. I mean, people don't believe that, but we seriously, we're looking like, okay. So, laughter can be a good lifeline, and there are some funny things that happen. Yesterday I saw a headline from Jay Leno. He says that being a caregiver for his wife is great. I feel needed. Did you see that? Yeah, he says he uses humor. It lightens up everything. Well, you might not like Jay Leno. I don't personally. But he might have said something important. And I have a friend whose husband's going through this. She calls me and says, whenever she says, "I just have to tell you something." And then we end up hysterically laughing because there's nothing else you can do. You can cry or you can laugh. And that is a way to lighten this load. So I hope you believe that truth-telling is powerful, and even if it takes some courage. And I introduced my metaphor of the suitcase, unpacked the emotions that I was carrying, which tired me out all the time, and I bet you can identify with them. But what I didn't say is in that suitcase was also a lot of love and resilience and a mindset of care living. And it had fond memories of shared times with Larry, along with a few hysterical ones. My load was lighter because people showed me compassion and made connections that kept me whole. So I'll leave you with what I found and sort of captured was the greatest truth of all, is that on the other side of truth is triumph. We are not powerless. We are not alone. And we're in this together. So I leave you with the thing that I always say at the end of all of my presentations: please be kind to yourself and find the triumph in telling your truth. So how much time do we have? Okay, so here's what I'd like to do. I don't want to take questions because we could go on forever. I'll be here. I'm at my table. But I'd like some of you brave souls to play a little activity with me called Truth and Triumph. And here's what it involves. If you want to volunteer, I will hand you one of my books as a gift. And I'd like you to stand up and tell me one truth and one triumph. So it might go like this. My truth is that I don't want this role. My triumph is that I found strength I didn't know I had. Another example. My truth is I miss the old us. My triumph is we will find ways to laugh. My truth is I didn't really want to come here today. My triumph is I showed up. So, and after somebody will volunteer to do that, we're going to applaud them, and they get a book. So, do I have any volunteers? Go for it. Okay. My truth?
My truth is that I really needed to come here today. My triumph is that I think I learned some wonderful things that can help me going forward.
You can do a fairy dust, too. But clapping is more fun. Thank you very much for sharing that. I hope it helps. Anybody else? Go for it.
There are no accidents.
Oh, sweet. That's great. Thank you. Oh, thanks for sharing that. Let's give him an applause. Okay, anybody else? Okay, let's start there, and then you.
My truth is that taking care of my sister's dog, my sister has dementia, and sometimes I resent it. My triumph is that when she asked to baptize the dog, I brought the baptismal candle.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And you.
All right. My wife did everything in the house. She did the income tax. She told me where to hang the pictures. She bought the food. She cooked the food. She made the smoothies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yep.
And my triumph is that I am realizing that she's not there anymore, and it becomes my job, and that's the end of that.
Courageous people. Oh,
thank you.
Anybody else? Well, I thank you all. This is a pleasure for me to do this. I wish you strength, and please be kind to yourself. Okay.
Sessions. It really helps us in planning for what everybody needs. We'll be having another
sessions are recorded. It's audio recordings for all the sessions other than the keynote, which was a video session. And I encourage you all to go listen to Giving Voice Chorus back in the sanctuary and for closing statements. The chorus works really hard. It's made up of both individuals with dementia and care partners. And it's truly amazing what they've accomplished. So I encourage you all to go see that. I want to thank Myrna. And I shared with her a little story about the suitcase. My husband had dementia, and he would go on business trips, and he'd always forget something. So I told him when he went on the next one, make sure he took everything out of the closet. And he came home, and the suitcase was really heavy because he took all the wood hangers.
All the what?
All the wood hangers from the closet along with his clothes.
He listened to you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. I got up from the chair. That's amazing.
Thank you so much for coming.